All right, Coach, how you doing? This week, I brought some of your friends along, some of my friends along to help us. We're going to do a lot about the Hugh Jackson Foundation. But before we get into that, I want to talk a little bit. There's been some news in the NFL. So we're going to kick off with some NFL. Nick and I share an opinion on some NBA super teams and what that really means. And we're going to get into that too a little bit and then focus in on the foundation. So we're going to kick it off by introducing our guests, obviously. Kim Demert, who works for the Hugh Jackson Foundation. Kim, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks, you guys. Anthony, thank you for having me. Nick, thanks for all the wonderful work you've been doing on behalf of the foundation and sharing stories.
And Nick Mack, who's Nick, we always bring on these guests that do like 100 different things. And I always tell them, like, I can't go through the whole list because it would take the whole show. But Nick is on The Ryan Show, has a podcast, and obviously works with the Hugh Jackson Foundation, among a bunch of other things. Welcome.
Yeah, I guess you could call me a jack of all trades. Thanks for having me on here, Kim. Thank you for thanking me. You are welcome. It is my pleasure to be doing this. And Coach, as always, thank you for everything you do. And thank you for giving me the opportunity you've given me, both of you. And can't wait to keep the great work going. We got a lot coming, so.
Coach, we're going to start with a small little move in the NFL. We talked about, Carolina. We've talked about Sam Darnold needing a change of scenery. How do you feel about the marriage there in Carolina with the Panthers?
I'm very excited for him. I think it's a collegiate atmosphere. The head coach, comes from Baylor, where he had a tremendous track record. The coordinator comes from LSU, where they won a national championship. So he's going to get good coaching. He's going to be in an environment that I think will reinvigorate him. I mean, he got beat up quite a bit, as the quarterback in New York, being a high draft pick, things not going well. I think this is the best thing that could have ever happened for him. And so I think they'll create an environment for him to get back to flourishing. I think he's a really good player. I've said that. I've gone on record and saying that. I just think he was in a tough situation. And I think this is going to give him a chance to go find his footing and become the pro that we all think he could become.
Could the Jets have been a more difficult position for a high rookie quarterback, right? They didn't really have a good offensive line. They didn't have a lot of weapons around them. We talked about this last week with Cynthia, right? If you don't have an offensive line, you don't have receivers, you don't have a running game, it makes it hard for everybody. We know that there's a running game in Carolina with McCaffrey. Do you think the offensive line and some of those other pieces are there for him?
I do. I thought they were one of the most improved teams a year ago. I mean, you look for teams that are on the come, and I think they are. I think what their coaching staff is doing, I think the environment, again, I keep talking about environment because I think that's where it starts, just the culture in the building. I think they'll protect him. I think they understand what they're getting. And I think that's the biggest part. You're getting a quarterback that's probably not the same player he was when he came out, and you need to rebuild him. The talent's there. But you got to give him the tools that he needs in order to have success. So I think they're going to build it around him, and I think he'll play well.
You're not going to get a disagreement from me because I've been high on Sam for a long time now. So does any Kim or Nick, do you guys disagree with that?
I am the wrong person to ask. My
Oh,
knowledge of football is a little bit skewed in a different perspective. So,
and we will get to that. Your
yeah.
part's coming.
The only thing I'd like to say is that I look at this trade from three angles, from Sam Darnold, from the Carolina Panthers, and from the New York Jets. And honestly, I don't see an area where anybody lost. I think that Carolina is able to take Matt Rhule and Joe Brady, who had a lot of success turning around Joe Burrow. If you kind of remember, Joe Burrow's season at LSU was his by far his best season in college. And that was thanks a lot to the work Joe Brady did. And I think that combined with Matt Rhule, Sam Darnold is in a great situation. And I think the New York Jets can take the organization the way that Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh want to take that organization. So I think everybody wins.
All right. Well, let's hope so, because that's always the best, right? When the trade works for both teams. I mentioned kind of in the intro, we're going to talk about NBA super teams. And Nick, we're going to start with you because I know you got a lot of slack when you came out and said what the definition of a super team is. And Coach Kim, I don't know if you guys know, we're talking like death threats a lot of slack when I say a lot of slack. And it's funny because I have the same opinion. So it's interesting that you got, you know, they got, you know, the people got on you pretty hard. You want to share with us what your definition of a super team is that got everybody so riled up?
Well, I just think there's quite the difference when an organization, you know, such as the Boston Celtics of 2007, 2008, when Danny Ainge makes all those moves for KG and Ray Allen and combine them with Paul Pierce, I think that's a little different than three guys in the offseason getting together as friends and saying, hey, we're all going to Miami. I just think that moves a little different. Do I blame LeBron for making the move or Chris Bosh for making the move? No. They were in terrible situations. They weren't going to win. And they had to compete with Boston. But I guess a lot of people took that as I was talking crap about LeBron. And, you know, all the LeBron fans, they got to come out of the woodwork and, you know, get a little carried away with their opinions.
Hey, listen, now that LeBron has gone to the correct team, we all love LeBron. but, you know, it took him a few years to figure out where he should be. So we do love him now. But, you know, like I said, I do agree with what you're saying because it's I looked up the definitions. I always, you know, coach, I think I've proven a little bit. I like to do my research.
And yeah, you do.
And I dove in. It's like, you know, a super team is when you bring in more than two all-star / Hall of Fame caliber players in their prime to a new organization. Well, that wasn't what happened in Golden State until they brought KD, right? Okay, they brought a Hall of Fame caliber, right? So that maybe can be considered. It isn't what happened in Chicago with Pippen and Jordan. Those two. Now, Pippen, you had said Pippen was drafted. Pippen was drafted by Seattle and traded, but
on draft night.
On draft night, yes.
He never played a game for Seattle.
Correct, yeah. Correct. I know I was reading through the comments that you had, so some of the people wanted to point that out, so I figured I'd point that out too. Yeah. And, you know, and same thing, like I said, the Warriors before KD were drafted, like you said, and what I remind people of about Miami, and again, I don't blame them. I would have done the same thing. I think I told Coach last week, I'm headed to Brooklyn this year, you know, if the Lakers don't get healthy. I'm going to sign a 10-day and try to get a ring. But it was different because people forget, Dwayne Wade was a free agent, although he had been on Miami. So he was a free agent. Boss was a free agent. LeBron was a free agent. They literally could have gone anywhere and created that scenario. So I'm with you. A little bit different in the NFL, Coach. You can't really, although Tampa seemed to come pretty close this year, but no super teams. Do you, you know, we talked last week, we don't really mind the super team because it gives players that empowerment to do what they want. But do you think it's bad for business when there's one or two teams that kind of dominate any league?
It can be bad for business. I mean, no doubt. I mean, but at the same time, I look at it from a player's perspective. You know, you want to win. Your value increases when you win. You make more money, you have more fun, you get more opportunities. So I understand that. And players, when you really look at it, when they walk out of this league, their legacy will be what it be. But it always comes down to, did you win? When you think of the Michael Jordans, the Kobe Bryants, the Will Chamberlains, they won championships. And if your name is not associated with a championship, I mean, people talk about Charles Barkley because he's on TNT, but they don't talk about him winning championship because he never did. You know, so if you don't win, I understand how players feel. It's no different in football. And there's only one basketball. And if you do create the super team, somebody, one of those three is going to have to take the third seat. And it don't always work that way, right? I mean, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. It's going to be interesting to see if the super teams can succeed. The Brooklyn Nets, like you say, they're one right now, but we got players that are injured, players that haven't played together. They played 7 games this whole season together with that full roster. So you just never know how it's going to all unfold. But at the same time, I understand everybody's concern, but I just, as a player, if you have a chance to be on a team where you got a chance to win a championship, there's nothing like it.
Did we, and by we, I mean fans, media, everybody, did we make it so bad that, you know, players now feel if they don't go and put themselves in a situation to win a championship, we're going to forget them? Because to your point, I think about Barkley gets teased all the time. You know, you get guys like Draymond Green, no offense, Barkley's a much better player than Draymond Green, saying, well, you don't have a ring. Shaq teases him all the time on TNT. You don't have a ring. You know, I think back to Dan Marino, one of the greatest, you know, quarterbacks ever, but he's not even really mentioned often because he never won a Super Bowl. But let's, you know, again, I'm not knocking Trent Dilfer. Trent Dilfer has a Super Bowl. Marino doesn't, but I'm picking Marino 10 times out of 10, right?
Absolutely. But when people talk about championships, they're going to talk about Dilfer and not Marino. You know, so it's just really interesting. You know, people say win. Winning is what it's truly all about in every sport. I don't know a sport that is not about winning. You know, I say it all the time. I don't think people are built to lose. And there's been some of the greatest people who have had losses in their career that are some of the best players that ever played a game. But they're not seen that way. And that's the way it works.
Yeah, absolutely. I gotta like the media. The media and the fans alike, they both attack the same guys. If you notice, it's guys like Russell Westbrook. It's guys like Carmelo Anthony. Like, I can't believe there's even a debate that Carmelo Anthony is a Hall of Famer or not. He's a clear-cut Hall of Famer, right? So, but because he doesn't have a ring, it's actually a discussion. And I think it's way more media and fan-driven these days, like with Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook had arguably one of the greatest stretches of all time as a point guard, 3 years in a row averaging a triple-double. But no one really talks about it because he hasn't won a championship. Same with Chris Paul. Dan Fouts is another one from the NFL that doesn't get enough credit for the way he played in the NFL, man. And it's because he didn't win a ring. And it's a shame.
It's funny that you bring up Westbrook because prior to him averaging that first year that he averaged a triple-double, we always talked about Oscar Robertson being the last person to average a triple-double. And then the second he does it, it didn't seem to carry as much weight anymore, which I thought was interesting. So, Coach, this week, Kim has been tweeting out a lot. I've been sending out a lot. Nick, I know, has been doing the same. You've been doing a tour of podcasts and shows and interviews about your time in Cleveland. And, you know, we talked about it a lot, so I don't want to, you know, go into that again. Other than to ask, because it's the one thing that I keep getting asked is, you know, that happened a couple of years ago. Why don't you now mostly Cleveland Brown fans, to be honest, have said, why aren't you just leaving it? Let it go. Why are we bringing it up now? And why is it important?
Well, it's being brought up now because I can officially talk about it. I was under contract to where I was not able to have these kind of conversations. And once that was over, I felt it very important to say exactly what happened in Cleveland. I think the truth should always be where everything is. At the end of the day, I mean, it's cost me my career, other coaches their careers, probably some players their careers at this time. And I think that's disheartening. I think that's tough. I don't think any of those people in Cleveland who would be in the situation that I was in, being somewhat lied to, betrayed, would feel good if they were in my shoes. And the biggest thing that I think the fans got to understand, I'm not just fighting. I want to make this very clear. I'm not disappointed that the Browns are winning. They should win. They have a really good football team now. They have a really good coaching staff. And I want to see them do extremely well. What I don't think is right is the way they got to that and the people that are just disposable damage from 2 years ago. And I think the fans need to understand I'm fighting for them too. Some of those fans were the people that were paying their hard-earned dollars to come watch these games in the stadium when we did not have a chance to win. And to me, if they really knew what was behind it all, I think they feel totally different. And I think I need to tell my truth, because I think my truth will stop this from ever happening again to another minority coach. And if I could just save one coach from ever having to be in that situation, then I think I've done my job.
So Kim, you know, you posted the info about the contract extension, which I saw some backlash of people saying they don't believe it. It's not true. There wasn't a contract extension. What's your proof? Even though you're kind of putting it out there. Why was it important to you? And thank you for doing it, by the way. Why do you think it was important to do that? And why do you think people are pushing back so hard and saying it's not real?
Well, first of all, Anthony, I want to praise you for being an educated journalist. And that's not a knock against other journalists, but sometimes people just kind of follow a narrative that fits for them. And it kind of keeps that momentum going. And they don't ask the hard questions. when I first met you, you told me that you were a fact-based journalist, and you have proven that point. And thank you very much for being that type of person. I respect that immensely about you. With that being said, the reason why it's critically important for me in this endeavor, and as you alluded to before, actually stated, you didn't allude to it, is I am very traditionally silent on social media unless I am putting out the mission of the Hugh Jackson Foundation. And I'm going to tie these two issues together in just a moment. But facts matter. Facts and everything matters. And I know that there's a lot of backlash, people saying, oh, you know, the document's a fraud, you're defrauding us, who cares, all of these other things that kind of go along with it. First and foremost, I want to make it absolutely 100% clear. There isn't anything that I would ever post, whether it be about human trafficking, social injustice, or what occurred in Cleveland, that is not fact-based, that I do not have substantiated, valid legal documentation or verifiable resources to provide that information. And I just challenge people, if you don't believe in the information I'm putting out there, don't ask me, don't criticize me. Call Jimmy Haslam. Call Peter John Baptiste. He manages all the communications at the Cleveland Browns. If you don't have their phone number, it's available. And if you can't find it, I'm sure I can give it to you. Ask the hard questions. Don't just be somebody who likes to come to conclusions based on myths, on fallacy, or on an emotional response, because it doesn't do anybody any good. We all deserve the truth, regardless of what that truth is. Now, we may not like the truth, but the truth does matter. It matters to me because I do a lot of work with individuals who are told, get over what happened to you. That's in the past. That doesn't matter. You're out of that situation. Move on. Really? What if that exact scenario happened to you? Now, what happened in Cleveland is not the same devastation as what happens to individuals who've been victimized in human trafficking, whether it's labor trafficking or sex trafficking, but they hear the same stuff from the same types of people. Move on. That's in the past. You made a choice. You made a cognitive decision to engage something in your life that led you to this end result. Why are you whining about it? Why are you complaining about it? What does this have to do with me in my life right now? And why should we care about what happened to you 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, or 10 years ago? I can take this show and the next 20 shows to tell you why it matters. What happened in Cleveland football matters. It doesn't just matter to Hugh Jackson. It doesn't just matter to the fans of the Cleveland Browns organization. It should matter to everybody, because when you have individuals who are in the power of position and authority who abuse that power and they manipulate individuals, that is not an isolated incident. That is a pattern of behavior that will be repeated time and time again until somebody stands up and says, enough is enough. And that's exactly what I'm doing.
So many good points there. And the one that I've been seeing the most, obviously, is the emotion. And I've been trying to coin this phrase, so I don't know if it's going to stick, but I'm going to keep saying it until it does, right? Emotion is the death of reason. And I've been getting so much of that kind of emotion of who cares what happened then? You know, we're happy with what's happening now, right? To your point. And just they're trying to brush it under the rug. And my response was two things. One, look at the roster. Coach and I talked about this last week. Look at the roster from when Coach signed to be the coach to even day one of week one. It's completely flipped. And I made, you know, a joke, but probably reality. I go, I don't think like Vince Lombardi could have won with that roster. It didn't strike fear into anyone's eyes. And it was different than what you signed up for. The other thing I heard a lot, Coach, was, well, you know, Haslam, that's the way he is. He does that to everybody. He lies to everybody. That doesn't make it okay. Coach, to use your phrase that we use every week, just because it's normal doesn't make it right.
Absolutely.
So when people say that, well, that's just the way he is, you should have known better. Do you respond to that? Like, is there a response to that?
Yeah, there's a response to that. I mean, it's so obvious that people don't get that when you're in this process, you're not looking and listening to outside information. You have a representative who is gathering information, who has conversations with you, but more so than that, you have to take the people at face value. You want to feel good. I mean, this is a National Football League with bylaws and a constitution, and they have things that you can do and can't do. So you would think that you're going into some real conversations with people to discuss an opportunity to lead their organization, and that they would be very transparent and forthcoming and all of those things. I just go back to what Kim said. And I think I see it now. This has been a pattern of who this person is, and it's showing itself, and it showed itself again. The last comment I want to make that she said, and I think people need to understand, you say, why are these fans just wanting to move on? I think it's so hard when you've had a narrative that says it's the coach, it's 1-31, he's not good enough. And it's been going for so long to really start. It's just human behavior. It's hard to go, wait a minute, that's not what it was. That's just hard to do, because you've been the narrative, that's all it's been the whole time. And so now all of a sudden, when these real factual things start hitting you in the face, you really don't want to deal with it. You really don't want to see it for what it is. You really want to move on, because it's easier. The hard part is to go back and look at it and say, wow, that really did happen. What do we do now? That's hard for people.
And I'm going to take this right back, Anthony, if you don't mind. I'm going to take this right back to human trafficking. It's in front of everybody's face every single day in every industry, in every environment. People don't want to see it. They want to talk the talk. If it's a positive phrase, if it's something that's current in that moment or in that news cycle, everybody's going to talk about it. Right now, it's National Child Abuse Awareness Month. How many people are talking about it? Unless you follow these types of things in social media, people aren't talking about it, but it's happening every day. And what happens under child sex abuse oftentimes will lead to human trafficking. And these are lifelong systemic problems that we all have to deal with in society. But people only want to focus on what impacts them in that moment. And if you have a child victim of sexual assault, and they now become an adult who's engaging in risky behaviors or behaviors other people don't like or don't understand, they're like, well, that happened when you were a kid. Get over it. These are repeated patterns of statements people make consistently because they don't want to deal with the reality because it's not directly affecting them. They want you to get over it because it doesn't impact their life until it does. And the minute they see that it impacts their life, then they're like, holy shit, what happened? Why wasn't somebody there stopping this before it came knocking on my door? Why didn't somebody bring this to my attention before my child was affected by this? Wake up, people. We keep trying to tell you all of these things. And I'm going to go back to what's happened in Cleveland. This impacts more than Hugh Jackson. This impacts more than just the coaching staff on his team in 2016 and 2017. This impacts the fans, the city, the taxpayers, and potentially other governmental agencies. And it definitely impacts the integrity of the league. All of these things or a snowball effect. It's a trickle-down effect. It impacts everybody. You just have to be willing to see it, acknowledge it, address it, and do something about it other than give lip service.
Yeah. I see you nodding your head over there, Nick, so I'll let you jump in and give us your two cents as well.
Look, I'm still learning as I'm going because I try to not pay attention to what I've heard in the media. I mean, being a part of the Hugh Jackson Foundation and being close with Coach and close with Kim for the last couple of months here has really opened my eyes to a lot. Not just what happened in Cleveland, but like Kim mentioned with human trafficking and all the other things going on around the world. it goes back to like Kim said, victim shaming and victim blaming, period. I know that I've been through some things that people want to blame me. Like we've talked about before on this program, people want to blame me for the choices I made. And I do take a lot of responsibility, but there was a lot of other things that happened that led to those situations. I don't use them as excuses, but I also, you know, Coach Hugh, myself, anybody who's been a victim of anything, anybody who's been through something doesn't deserve to be blamed for it or shamed for it either. I think that, you know, I was growing up during this whole thing going on, and Coach said it last night on our other show, the Ryan Show. It's kind of fishy when someone goes from being a really successful coordinator in Oakland to an 8-8 stint as a coach with the Bengals. And then all of a sudden an organization does nothing for him and he goes 1-23 and they extend him. You know what I mean? So it just says a lot. There's a lot of fishiness, and not with what Hugh and Kimberly are saying. I believe them before I believe anybody. You know, I trust you guys we've been through a lot already in the couple of months we've been, you know, working together. It's just really shady what we've been seeing. And it really goes to show you, if somebody wants to get a narrative pushed and they've got a little bit of money and a little bit of power, they can get that narrative pushed and completely ruin lives, change lives for the worse. They also have the power to make it better, but rarely do they do, right?
Yeah, there's it's funny because I asked this question to some of the people that were pushing back on me, Coach, where I said, listen, you didn't go from being this, you're a really good coach, offensive coach of the year for 25, 30 years, and then all of a sudden you go to Cleveland, you forgot how to coach. Like, it doesn't work that way. People don't just forget how to do things. And that the other thing was, and someone was trying to understand, because I was telling them about, and Kim, I think you put through the quotes from what that final press conference says, and I believe it was internal discord was right. The term that was used. And I tried to explain it to someone and they weren't getting it. And I said, you have to understand, in 100 years, there's been 20 or less minority head coaches. They can't be labeled as, you know, difficult. And they didn't get it. And I said, let me give you an example, right? And this isn't, you'll see that at the end, I hope it ties together as well as it did for this person. And I said, just look at, we watched the Fresh Prince reunion. And I said, look what Will Smith did to the original Aunt Viv, right? She was pregnant. She was moody, that's her words. And they got into it. And he said, she's difficult. She got fired and she never worked again. And she held a grudge for all those years until they did the reunion and came back. And she said, do you know what happens to a Black actress who's, the word is out there that I'm difficult and never got another job. And to Coach's point, right? Well, internal discord, coach is a problem. Coach was unsuccessful. Maybe all minority coaches are difficult. Maybe all of them are going to be unsuccessful. And, you know, Coach and I talked about this. If it means one doesn't get a chance, we've done the entire group a disservice. So that's why I think, right? I didn't say why I think it's important that you're talking about it now, but it is important that we talk about this because, you know, to Kim, to your point earlier, we talk about, you know, last week it was stop Asian hate and that's going to disappear, right? In the NBA, we had the bubble and everyone was talking about, you know, Black Lives Matter. Now we don't really talk about that anymore. You know, it just, you see these things, they're so, the news cycle is so short and we start to talk about it when it's hot and then it goes away. But guess what? There's all those people that still have to live in that moment, right? A lot of women who've been abused, who've come out and said it and said, oh, how did you act? How did you dress? I don't believe you. Well, you know what? We got to do the research first and find out. And then, right? Like, I'm not saying make everybody guilty until proven innocent, but do some research and find out before you just let them off the hook, which brings me to the foundation. So the Hugh Jackson Foundation, Coach, I guess we should start with you. When did this start? Why did it start? What kind of sparked it? And then maybe Kim and Nick, you can kind of tell us your roles in there as well.
It kicked off late in 2016, really got going in 2017. I wanted to impact, me and my family, we really wanted to impact human trafficking. We had seen some things firsthand and seen the devastation that it brought on families and individuals. And we started down this road and was really doing some really great things. We partnered with the Salvation Army in Cleveland, the Harbor Light District, to create a residence for human trafficking victims. I then proceeded to be introduced to Kim. She became my new executive director because I thought she was just phenomenal. I mean, she is good at what she does. She has a way with people. She can get things moving in the right direction. And when you're dealing with something like this, you got to have somebody who's going to put their feet on the ground, roll up their sleeves and go to work. And I don't know a better person in the world to do that other than her. So she is taking this challenge on and she's taking it to a whole different level. We've also started Strangers to Changers, which has been an offshoot of that, to really impact communities and get people to really talking to each other as opposed to being strangers with each other. So a lot of what we do, I mean, my name is definitely tied to it and there's nothing that I wouldn't do to help. But the person that really makes it move and makes it go is Kim.
Well, Kim, those are some nice words from Coach. I'll give you a second to finish blushing a little bit.
I know, right?
So tell us a little bit about kind of your role and, you know, how you came on board and what you do.
First of all, I was completely blown away and honored by the opportunity. And as you've learned from just our limited contact with each other, is I'm very passionate about what I do because I believe in truth. I believe in helping people who have been silenced, who have been mistreated, misunderstood, and quite honestly disposed of because somebody else devalued them and looked at them as a disposable commodity. It's something I don't tolerate, which again takes me back to Hugh and what's going on with Cleveland. I believe as a human being, we all owe each other the same level of gratitude, empathy, respect, condolences when necessary, and opportunities that we all would hope for, not only for ourselves, but for our children, for those of us who have children or may wish to have children in the future. We are only as strong as the strength that we give to others. The minute that we start tearing everybody down, we are tearing down the fabric of humanity. And at one point in time, we're going to be looking in front of the mirror and saying, what happened? And I'm so sorry to my children and grandchildren for what I've done. So through the Hugh Jackson Foundation, yes, it's critically important to us to engage with our communities, to let them know what human trafficking is, but it's equally important to let them know what it isn't and where it really stems from. It doesn't, you know, when we talk about human trafficking, that's the visual effect of a manifestation of numerous wrongs that have happened in somebody's life that has led them to that end result that we now label as human trafficking, which brings us into the development of the Strangers to Changers program. Human trafficking happens because somebody is vulnerable for a reason, whether they're economically vulnerable, whether they are vulnerable because they have a substance abuse problem or an addiction problem. They could be vulnerable because of circumstances outside of their control. And I'll bring it to COVID-19 pandemic, which put a lot of people into vulnerable situations. And now the survival mode kicks in. Every human being has it. Hugh Jackson had this while he was coaching in Cleveland. He was stuck in survival mode. We all go into a survival mode. And how we deal with that survival mode really depends on those outside influences. Who's in your circle of trust at that moment? And where do they lead you? I'm going to go into now victimization. People become victimized by the perpetrators of fraud. Say, listen, I'm going to be the person that's going to take you out of this situation, or I'm going to be the person to give you an opportunity at a better life or to fulfill that dream or that mission that you really are compelled to do. And those are typically the ones who are there for their own self-serving purposes. And then you have this escalating series of events that as a victim of human trafficking, you don't see a way out. And when you try to get out, people deny you. They tell you, you're responsible for being in that situation. You're responsible for this outcome, or get over it. Or why didn't you just walk away from that, John, or walk away from that trafficker or that abuser, or just put down the drugs? You're responsible for what happened. Well, yes, in part they are. And I'm the first one to let these individuals know what their responsibilities are so they can heal from that standpoint. But not a single person ever is born, grows up and says, I want to be victimized. Whether it's in the labor trade, the sex trade, professional world or corporate jobs, or as a child who gets abused at home. The foundation, our mission is to, again, not to just tell people what it is, but to educate them what it isn't. And then how do we strip down to what are the real risk factors? And Strangers to Changers tries to eliminate what all of those risk factors are. If we've got kids who don't have enough food to eat, instead of them having to go do some petty crimes or to do things that maybe they shouldn't so that they can eat or they can help pay the bills at home, why don't we as a community look at what we need in that community and fill that need so we're not worrying about victimization. We're not worried about these individuals being exploited. We're not worrying about parents who are being coerced into jobs where they're being manipulated and they're being underpaid and overworked. And that turns into a whole nother set of circumstances. If we learn to, again, realize that we are all part of the fabric of humanity, we should never be strangers in our community. We should all be changers, and we should not be victimizing each other. Unfortunately, decades of acceptance, of politics, of denial have led us to shred our fabric so bare that we are barely holding on. And our goal as the Hugh Jackson Foundation, through a variety of our programs, including a new one we're getting ready to launch, which is called Enough, is to mend that fabric and to teach people how to recognize their strengths within their community. And this is where Nick has been fantastic for us. Amazing. He's helping us connect the dots from a variety of people who are not strangers in their communities and giving them the power, the platform, and the information out there so that it will not only tell somebody where they can go to get help, but it highlights the fact that there's a multitude of people out there who are willing and able and desire to make a positive change in their community instead of the trollers, the shamers, and the blamers who are ever present everywhere we go and ripping us apart. And I thank Nick immensely for what he's doing.
So Nick, tell us a little bit about then what you're doing, because I think, you know, when we're going through tough times, I found it's always the people that want to kind of keep us on that road downwards that they always seem to reach out, and we don't see enough of people who want to help and want to give us a hand and lift us up, you know, to the points we talked about earlier. It's not affecting me, so just, you know, take your problems over there and deal with them. You know, I got to deal with, you know, my life over here. So Nick, how did you get involved? What is it that you're doing? And sounds like thank you for doing it, but tell us a little bit more about what you do.
Well, you know what? First of all, Kim, Hugh, again, just thank you so much for everything you've done for me so far. I think that the work Kim and Hugh are doing, it's personal for me. I've been down and out and told that it was my fault before. You know, it wasn't just 4 years ago that I was homeless, on the streets, addicted, and almost dead. And, you know, I've turned my life around, and I kind of have a duty, having been through the things I've been through, also a victim of sexual abuse in my life, things that, you know, are really hard to talk about, but I think I have a duty to talk about them. And I think I also have a duty to tell my story, but help others tell their story as well. And there was the first, and what I'm doing is I'm taking different organizations, foundations, like Kim said, we're being dot connectors for between the community and these organizations. Some headed up by some well-known names and some that need to have their names put out there a little bit more. And the first story I did was about a woman who had been trafficked by her own mother from the age of 6 months old till 17 years old. And you hear these stories in your life and you kind of read them in the newspapers and you see them in, you know, you see them on the ID Discovery, on the crime channels. But when you hear the person who went through it literally look you in the eye and tell you their story, it changes something. I mean, it really does. And I think it's nervous laughter when I said that. It changes something in you and it makes you more invigorated, more empowered, and more inspired to keep going. And from there, it's just, I want to tell everybody's story. I'd love to tell everybody's story, but unfortunately there's millions and millions of stories out there. But also,
yeah, on the flip side, I'm just going to interrupt you quickly to say, I know, I appreciate wanting to share every story, but let me say, you know, this, because I think it's important. Sharing as many stories as you can is so important, because someone is going to hear that story and relate and be like, yeah, that's me. Or yeah, I had something similar. And if it even changes one thing in their life where they're like, oh, there's help out there, or there's something that I can do, or someone I can call, or whatever, it's important. So don't feel bad that you can't share the millions of stories, right? Because that one story might affect millions of people.
And you know, the one thing that's why I'm so open about my thing is because my story and what has happened to me in my life and how I've turned it around is because one person hears that, I did what I was supposed to do. If one person takes what I says and changes something about their lives and lives a better life because of it, I did what I was supposed to do. And also with these stories, when I met Hugh, I'm trying to break into sports journalism, sports broadcast. I'm working for the Ryan Show, and we kind of hit it off. Like I did another one of his podcasts, because you know he was a man of many, many shows and many podcasts. But we hit it off, and then you know, I shared about my story on my social media and I reached out to Kim and we hit it off. And what this opportunity and this blessing that I've been giving from Hugh Jackson and Kim and the Hugh Jackson Foundation, I get the best of both worlds. In some cases, and I'll, you know, more than once lately, I get to talk to guys that I've always wanted to interview and talk to, but at the same time, I get to positively impact and maybe potentially help change the world a little bit at a time. And, you know, I don't think there is any better way that I would want to break into journalism, sports journalism, whatever the case may be, than doing what I'm doing right now.
You know, we talk, Coach and I, right? We talk about sports a lot and we talk about social issues. And look, I love sports. Obviously, I think everybody here loves sports, but sports are you know, to a point, right? Life matters more. You know, the truth matters, helping people matters more. So I applaud all of you for all the work that you're doing. Kim, thank you. Nick, thank you. Coach, thank you very much. How can, you know, people get more information or where can they find the Hugh Jackson Foundation?
They can always reach us through the foundation website, www.hughjackson.org. They can call me. I can tell you, I have two phones that never leave my side.
I can attest to that. I've seen it.
Nick's always the victim of, Nick, I gotta go. I gotta take this call. Yep.
I gotta go. Hugh's calling me.
But they, you know, they could call us 216-217-3810. Again, it's 216-217-3810. We have had people reach out to us through our social media accounts, particularly Instagram. I will share a recent story. It's public, so I'm not disclosing anything confidential. But we had a family reach out to us seeking help to find a missing loved one. So unfortunately, in this particular case, it didn't end the way that we wanted it to, but the family, the takeaway here was the family was able to reach us. We responded. We were able to put together through many of our partners in Northeast Ohio, the Cleveland Family Center for Missing Children and Adults, Internet Crimes Against Children, and local law enforcement to help find, you know, the individual who had gone missing. And we don't turn away people who cry out for help, whether they come to me and say that, hey, I'm a victim of human trafficking, or I have a mother that says, I'm afraid for my child, call us. We are here to help. If we cannot help, we will do everything we possibly can to put you in the right direction with somebody who can help you. We've got a fantastic nationwide network. We work very closely with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They are an amazing organization, and they don't just help identify or locate children. They will help any law enforcement agency, any department. They've got the most incredible forensic science team out there. And like I said, we've been very blessed, and it's been thanks to Hugh Jackson. What he does as a man, what he does as a human is far more significant and impactful and life-changing than anything anybody could ever conceive of his record with the city of Cleveland. And for what he's done for the world, I thank him. And just, you know, for people who need help, if they don't reach out to us, reach out to somebody. There is help out there.
Thanks, Kim. Coach, I'm gonna let you have the last word this week. And, you know, again, you know, not just for everything that we do every week, but for the Hugh Jackson Foundation, I do thank you.
Thank you. I just wish more people would become more educated on what human trafficking is and how it is played out everywhere, to be very honest with you. And please get the information, do everything you can to help change a life that way. Please don't be strangers in your communities. You know, let's quit being strangers. Let's everybody try to be changers. The last part that I want to leave everybody with, I know there's somebody listening that's going through something, somehow, some way. And everybody, you said something earlier, Anthony, you talked about team. Kim talked about it. Who's going to help you get to where you want to be? you know, Nick talks about it. I think that's so important. If you don't have the right people on your team, you don't make it. I wouldn't have made it in Cleveland the couple years that I was there if I didn't have the right team. Kim was a part of that team. Dr. Shavers was a part of that team. There's so many days I just wanted to go in and fight everybody, and people would pull me off the ledge, you know, because that's what you do. You get backed in a corner in these situations, you don't know where to turn. And if you turn the wrong way, bad things happen. So it's so important to seek the help, have the right team, but more so than that, make sure you understand the situation you're in. It's so important.
All right. Thank you, Coach. Again, Kim, Nick, thank you guys so much for your time tonight. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks, Coach.
Get the full Sports Fluent experience at sportsfluent.com. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at sports_fluent. You can search us on YouTube at sportsfluent. And don't forget to subscribe. Or if you're looking for some great merchandise or to support the podcast, visit sportsfluent.com/merchandise.